Peace and grace. Good evening and welcome to another Thursday night edition of Make Some Intelligent Noise. I am your host for the next 30 minutes. My name is Rochelle Wilson, and I am here as an advocate and an activist to change some of the past by ensuring that our future is fair and equitable. But you cannot change laws if you do not know what they are. So as much as I am here to report to you what it is that's going on in our criminal justice and our prison reform, as well as what's the news and what's the buzz, what's taking place and who's doing what, especially in our prison systems, I think it's very important that we also understand what the law is. So I wanted to just bring folks up to date and let them know that right now, from where, based on what where I left off, I am studying the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, because this can go all over the United States. This book, no matter what state I go in, Delaware, Georgia, Texas, Louisiana, it doesn't matter. Wherever I go, if I have this book in my head, if I have the knowledge of this book in my head, I can apply the law. Now, what makes the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure so important is a little word called jurisdiction. And hopefully everyone out there watching has their Black's Law Dictionary so you can follow me. But for those of you who are still waiting on it to arrive, let me tell you what is jurisdiction and why is it so relative to the federal laws. Jurisdiction, from my Black's Law Dictionary, a term of comprehensive import. It is the power of the court to decide a matter in controversy and presupposes the existence of a duly constituted court with control over the subject matter and the parties. You really need your Black's Law Dictionary, because if there's anything that I want to impart upon you this evening, it is imperative that you understand words. Words matter. And for those of you of a religious nature, if you've read your Bible, the Biblios Helios, it tells you that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and God was the Word, and from the Word God created and did things all just by using the Word. Well, in a court of law, the Word is also extremely important. And I'll tell you why it's important, and there's another piece of jurisdiction I'll share. But first, let me tell you why words are so important and to comprehend them. It starts off, jurisdiction starts off with saying it is a term of comprehensive import. So you have to comprehend the words. If you're standing in a courtroom for whatever reason, no matter what your purpose is for standing there, and you're listening or engaging the courts in a conversation, you need to know what you're saying. You need to know what is being said to you. It is important, it is imperative that you understand what words mean. Some people that do not understand what the words mean, they find themselves all jacked up in a situation that is very, very uncomfortable, that had they understood and or understood or overstood, comprehended the language, they wouldn't be in such a sour situation. So words are very important. And I never knew that prior to studying the law 10 years ago when my journey began studying the law. I knew that words were important from a spiritual perspective, what we say to people, what people say to and about us. For example, I first learned the importance of words when a preacher, Christian preacher person told me that if you continuously say, "I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired," Well, you are manifesting that energy into your life because you're speaking those words and you keep saying them and saying them. You say them to your friends and your friends say them to you and you're receiving that. Words matter. If you think you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, then you really will be sick and tired. For those people who say, hey, how you doing today, John, Mary, Frank, Bob, whoever, and they say, man, if it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all. Well, guess what? You're inviting that into your life. So what you say really is very important. You know, I used to ask people when I was, you know, into the church very, very heavily, I would say, oh, honey, pray for me. No, I don't ask people to pray for me anymore because you do not know the words that people are using in order to pray for you. So, you know, my mama always says she'll just take it to her closet. I mean, and I understand what that means as well. So I don't ask people to pray for me. And unless I know that they are a person who comprehends the word. And a lot of times you will hear me say, I comprehend, or do you comprehend what I'm saying? Because I won't use the word understand. I don't choose to use the word. Do you understand what I'm saying? Or I understand what you're saying, because you're saying you are standing under whatever it is that the person is saying. So words really matter. It is extremely important, you know, for everyone out there that you call yourself an activist or an advocate for reform, you want to be a part of the battle, the fight, you want to stand and stand the good fight, you know, I'm all for that. I certainly appreciate it, and I'm sure that everyone else does as well. But comprehend the words that you are using as you move forward. So just that's my little sidebar. Let's get back to the federal rules of civil procedure and the word jurisdiction, how the two of those are linked in. So let me finish. It is a term of comprehensive import. Import, you're importing it, you're putting it in yourself, you're comprehending within yourself what it means, whatever the word is. It is the power of the court to decide a matter in controversy and presupposes the existence of a duly constituted court with control over the subject matter and the parties. Go to your Black's Law Dictionary, find out what is subject matter, look it up, what does the word subject matter mean? What is a subject? What is matter? For those of you who study science, you know that matter is anything that is firm, anything that is of substance, of sustenance. It's not air. You can't pull it out of the air. Matter. I am matter because I'm a human being. I walk, I breathe, I live, and I'm solid. I'm a human being. I matter. I am matter, and I do matter. So the second part of that, and I really do hope you'll look up these words, jurisdiction defines the powers of courts to inquire into facts, apply the law, make decisions, and declare judgments. Jurisdiction defines the powers of courts to inquire into facts, apply the law, make decisions, and declare judgments. You must understand, overstand, interstand, comprehend, import, comprehensive import, what the words mean. So when you go to a courtroom or you're involved in a court situation, you need to understand, does the court have jurisdiction over you and the situation? And that's not what tonight's lesson is about. So I'm not gonna get too heavy into that. That's for you to study and for you to comprehend if you have your Black's Law. And trust me, you can do it on Google. Google is a great place to start, but to really comprehend it the way that the judges get it, the defense attorneys, the prosecuting attorneys, the attorney general's office, the governor, and all of these different people who study the law, in order for you to have a comprehensive, conversation with any of them, you must know what the words mean. And you must understand, interstand, overstand, comprehend. Are you under their jurisdiction? Jurisdiction. So that's the word for tonight. Maybe if I have time, I'll get back to that, but I have to move forward. We only have 30 minutes. I do not have my timer, and I said I was going to bring my timer. Anyway, had a delightful, absolutely intriguing conversation with a gentleman by the name of Brad Owens, and I do pray that he is watching this cast tonight. I'm telling you, that man, young man, good-looking young man, actually, very, very attractive young man, very young. He's only 31 years old, I think. I think he said he's 31. Had the good fortune to sit and have a conversation with Brad Owens about my reentry group, my support group for the returning citizens. And we sat and talked. It was supposed to be a 25, 30-minute meeting. I believe we were there at least something close to 2 hours. I became emotional. What he was saying to me was so emotional that it just resonated. It just touched my heart in so many different levels. But I can tell you that that man knows what he's doing. He's been at this game for a long time, and he was very transparent with me in our conversation. We were able to share information with each other on an intimate level that I won't, obviously, if it's private and intimate, I'm not going to say it out loud. But I will say I respect him for the information that he did share with me. And what I can share with you is that when it comes to, let me get my notes, because he was kind enough to write down some notes for me. But let me share this with you. Reentry is a process. It is a very difficult process. It's a new life after returning home, after incarceration. So if you have someone who's been incarcerated for a year, well, okay, comparatively speaking to someone who's been incarcerated for 10 years or 27 years or 40 years, it's a process. Things change. People that you knew, maybe they're gone. Maybe they're not alive anymore. Maybe they moved into a different state and you have no phone number to contact them. So, you know, life goes on every moment, every day, every second. Life is moving fast, 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 fast. And you don't always, you know, for someone who's only been incarcerated for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, maybe even 5 years, you can be released, come home, and it may not take that long to really get reacclimated right back into, you know, society, because you haven't been gone that long. But even 5 years is quite a bit of time to try to come back home and just jump right into society. It's a process. And if there's anything I took away from that conversation with everything that Brad shared with me, it is a process. So something as simple as, and I've heard Omar Showtime has mentioned this, as well as Deborah Muhammad, which, by the way, our love and sympathies go out to Brother Deborah. He was attacked, and, you know, he was attacked not so long ago, and he's recovering from those injuries, and it's really amazing that the young boys that attacked him, he's the very person who would be standing up for them under normal circumstances and situation, and they didn't even realize that. But anyway, so we pray for Brother Deborah and for the brothers that are the men, the young boys that attacked him. We pray for them as well. We really do, that they'll get their minds right, because it's a mess. It's absolutely a mess. But anyway, I've heard them say, and I even had the good fortune to experience it, but coming home after being incarcerated, just knowing how to use a cell phone with my dear friend Andre Johnson. We went out, we spent time together. I tried to be whatever, you know, mentor, a counselor, a friend that I could be to help acclimate this brother back into society. And I can say, because he does have a strong family dynamic, it wasn't some of the obstacles he didn't have to face, but something as simple as us going out, we got the cell phone and he kept it in his pocket. He did not want to carry it with him. He saw no purpose for the cell phone. It took a while for me to constantly tell him over and over again that using your cell phone is like having a miniature handheld computer, that you can just conquer the world just by having a cell phone. And so now we've gotten to the point where he at least will answer the cell phone. And so that's good. I don't know if he does any Google searches on it, but he definitely knows how to answer it. He knows how to text message. And I guess our next step is to teach him how to send an email or, you know, things like that as he moves forward. But something that simple for a person who's been incarcerated for 1 year, that's no big deal. They know what a cell phone is. They know how to use it. The latest model comes out. They've only been gone for 1, 2, 3 years. They'll just get a new updated model and move right along. But for someone who's been in jail, incarcerated in prison for 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 40 years, my God. And then we want them to come home, put them in a family dynamic for those that even have a family, okay, and tell them, get a job, get back out there, and get a job and fit right into society. No, no. That is what I learned with Brad Owens. And maybe it's something that I already knew intuitively or intrinsically, just because I'm not totally stupid every day of the week. It's a process. And after talking with him, I just comprehend that there are mental issues. Sometimes people go into the prison and they already have a slew of mental and emotional issues or concerns that need to be addressed. Maybe that's why they even got in trouble in the first place, is simply because they had issues and they needed counseling and did not receive that. But once you come out, no matter how you went in, when you come out, your life has changed. You know, I heard my son tell me, Mom, I have seen and heard things inside of this prison that I will never be able to forget. Never be able to forget things he's heard from 3 or 4 cells down, or maybe things he saw out the window or the cage or the whatever they have there. But whatever he saw and whatever he heard, he told me he will never be able to forget it. Now, obviously, my son is coming home to, I pray, as long as I'm alive and I have some good family that is still here with us, my son will come home to a strong support system. And counseling, emotional and mental counseling, will be the very first thing that is on the list for my son in order to reacclimate him into society and just to get his mind right. So whatever he saw, whatever he heard, I pray that we are able to help him to get through whatever he saw and whatever he heard. And trust me, I will not ask him, because I don't think emotionally, I don't know that I could even handle whatever it is that he wanted to tell me if he told me he saw this or he heard that. And my imagination is extremely creative. So just saying that much to me is enough to offer me sleepless nights. So that's on a personal level. But think, You know, my son has been there for 10 years, for 10 years, eight of those years, he has been locked in a cell for 23 hours a day. So that alone has got to have caused him some kind of emotional trauma, you know, stress, post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, for God's sakes, people he loved, his grandmother, my mother, you know, he lost her while he was in prison. He needs counseling. Why am I saying all of this? I'm saying it personally about me, but I'm referring to the families of those people who are returning citizens. You cannot expect your loved one, whether it was daddy, mommy, husband, girlfriend, son, daughter, no matter who it was, if they have been in prison longer than I'd say 5 years, they need counseling when they come home. And they need you to be patient with them. They need you to help them. Yes, I know. For all of us moms and wives and whoever, we've been holding down the house without the covering of a man for whatever reason. You know, we out here, we making the money and bringing it home and paying the bills. Now someone returns to the household. We want them to go get a job and help us, you know, give us some support, some relief. Hell, I'm tired of paying all the bills by myself. No, 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 please. I am asking for the families of returning citizens. I am pleading with you. Have some patience. It's a process. Have some, you know, love them enough to help them to get through at least the first 3 months, 90 days. You have got to help them, you know, just understanding stuff. Whether it's, I don't know. Okay, I'll take me. And because I don't know what all the issues could be. Me, Rochelle Wilson, I spent 12 days in jail many, many, many moons ago as a young person because I was driving without insurance. So for 12 days, they put me in jail. And honey, whoo, Lord have mercy. I'm telling you, that was a whole traumatic experience for me. The first 3 days that I was in jail, it's funny almost. I banged my head, you know, on the bars in the prison because I just couldn't think, what am I going to do? I can't be in here for 12 days. For one day, I cannot be in this place. But as time went on, you know, God often takes a negative situation and turns it into a positive. At that particular time that I was incarcerated for my 12 days in jail, I was a Christian. I was a woman who believed in Yeshua, Jesus the Christ, and I went to church. And so the women that were in the prison with me, and there were 12 women, I was able to get a little Bible study going, and some of them, actually all of them but one, every woman in that prison section where I was converted or became a worshiper of the Bible as a result of us doing our Bible study. So, you know, what seems like it's a bad thing sometimes can be a good thing. But I tell you that only to say, when I came home, I did not want anyone to close the door. Do not close me in this room by myself with the door closed. Do not close the door. Like, I was snapping. Of course, I'm over that now, you know, but that because it's been so many years ago. But, you know, for a long, long time, it was an issue for me to close the door. I don't want the door closed. I would go to the bathroom with the door open. I was in my bedroom with the door. I don't want the door closed. I did not want to be confined into a small space. Now, that's my issue, and I only went to jail for 12 days. Imagine someone who's been in prison, incarcerated, for 12 years. Think about the habits that they have picked up. Think about even the survival habits that they had to pick up in order to live, in order to survive in that environment every day. You know, who knows what they had to do or how they had to talk. Maybe they went in as a very simple, caring person who just made a mistake and got jammed up and ended up in prison. Okay, but now you're in prison. Now you're in here with the big boys, and you gotta, you know, it's fight or flight, you know, get down or lay down, or whatever the adage might be. The point that I'm making, you go in one way, that's not always how you come out. Prison changes your life, and it's not always for the better. They call them correctional facilities, and I'm still trying to figure out, you know, what do they correct? That's a whole nother show. What do correctional facilities actually correct? No. What correctional facilities do is incarcerate people, put them in cages like animals, and basically, you know, we learned from the prison riots with Floyd and all of those people and the guards, we know what happens to people who are incarcerated. They are not treated with humanitarian decency and respect, no. There are some guards who are kind and humanitarian, and they treat men like men, and they allow a man to be a man. But there are others that do not, and they need training. I'm telling you now, the Department of Corrections needs to do a whole overtaking of training for the guards, the correctional officers, as they're called, you know, on how to treat incarcerated people. But again, remember the psychology, you know, prison guards and correctional officers, they're incarcerated too for 8 hours a day. And if they pull a double shift, then I guess it's, 16 hours and whatever. So they don't like it very much, and they can be pretty nasty and oftentimes not very nice. So understanding all of those dynamics, all I'm saying tonight is to the families of returning citizens, your loved one, whoever that person is, male or female, they are now coming back into the home. Have some patience with them, for God's sakes. Have some humanitarian decency. You don't know what they've been through. They might tell you some stuff on the surface, but you don't know deep down on the inner parts of them what they have dealt with, what they've suffered through. And it's a process. They may even need time to feel safe with you, to trust you again after all of these years, just to trust you, to be able to open up to you and tell you what happened or what's going on. Me personally, I'm almost afraid of what my son is going to say to me on the day that I finally get to hold him in my arms again and have him back here at the house. What will Justin tell me? What has he seen? What has he heard? I'm like the monkey. I just want to close my eyes, close my ears. I'm not sure that I'm ready to hear it. But by the time he gets here, and even now, I am preparing myself to be patient. One of the things I learned with Andre, my dear friend, with the cell phone, is I actually got frustrated with him. After maybe 3 weeks had gone by, 2 or 3 weeks of me constantly telling him, Andre, answer your phone. This is how you use the phone. You have to push this button, and then you hit that, and this is how you turn it off. And after 2.5, 3 weeks of doing that, I was frustrated. That's only 3 weeks. Now, maybe I'll have a little bit more patience with Justin because he's my son. I have a different feeling and emotion towards Justin than I do Andre, although I care very much about Andre. I really love my son a lot. We're all we have. It's just Justin and I. Now that my mother has crossed over, it's just Justin and myself. And God bless my auntie. We've got auntie. She's 86 years old. And we pray she's here to see Justin come home. We really like that very much. So if I got frustrated with Andre in only 3 weeks in trying to get him to use a cell phone, imagine what his family is dealing with just trying to get him straight. I mean, just on so many different levels. Now, again, this, the good news is that Andre is the kind of person, you know, Andre came home, he hit the ground running. He did not waste one moment. We had a little conversation about proper clothing and attire and what people are wearing today versus 27 years ago when he was first incarcerated. Fashion changed in 27 years. So we got him appropriated for that so that he can go to a job interview. We, you know, we had Corey Priest was really looking out for him, and somebody else, I forgot who, but there was just other people looking out for Andre to show him how to, you know, how to do a job application, how to go online, how to use a computer, how to use a cell phone. All of these things are imperative in the world and the society that we live in today. So to the families of returning citizens, this podcast is for you tonight. This is for you. For the families of returning citizens, this podcast is for you, because I'm the family of a returning citizen. And I know, you know, I know that it's a lot emotionally to deal with them gone. All the finances are on you. I don't know about you, but I'm a mother. I lay in bed sometimes. I can't even sleep. I'm up till 2 and 3 in the morning studying. Usually I'm in my Black's Law Dictionary, but I'm studying the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, but I'm reading, I'm doing something, I'm studying, I'm Googling, I'm whatever, because I can't sleep. My mind, when I close my eyes, it just instantly goes to my son. And what experiences did he have today? What experience is awaiting him tomorrow? These are questions that that I don't necessarily need answers to, but I lay in bed at night sometimes and I can't help but think about it. So yes, I'm holding down the fort, and someday, by the grace of Almighty Allah, Justin will be returned to me, and we'll have to start the process of getting him back on track. How to use a cell phone, how to use a computer. I mean, honestly, I already have a cell phone and a computer. I've already purchased one for him, just waiting for him to come home. I've got him a great computer, and it will never go out of date. And just waiting for him to come home so I can teach him how to use it, or get him in a computer class if necessary. Whatever it takes, when your loved one returns home, comes back to the family, they're dealing with a lot, and we need you to have patience and to understand it is a process. So please, you know, love them enough to go through the process with them, and until at least the first 90 days before you just throw in the towel and get angry and frustrated with them. Try not to do that. So after having my conversation with Brad Owens, and him making it very clear to me about the psychological and the mental issues, the emotional concerns that they may come home with, not to mention there's drug and alcohol. You know, don't think because people are incarcerated that they don't have access to some of the same goodies that are out here on the street. You know, what's out here on the street can definitely get inside of the prisons. And so you got to think about drug and alcohol counseling and what effect is that going to have on them returning home. And then another thing Brad made very, very clear to me is peer support and peer pressure. So if they're hanging around the same friends they had that when they went into prison, that may not be the best thing for them. They need strong, sturdy support group. And again, let's talk about the returning citizen that has no family. They have no one to come home to. No support. What about them? Well, some of the things that I've shared with you tonight are considered as high risk factors for recidivism. If these things are not dealt with immediately upon release, we're looking at potentially this person going right back into the system, right back into an incarcerated situation. Because after 5, 6, 7, 10 years, 20 years of learning a habit and being conditioned and having another grown man telling you or woman telling you constantly, 24 hours a day, sit down, stand up, shut up, talk, whatever it is, you know, somebody constantly in your ear telling you what to do, when to do it, how to do it, and you're forming habits. You've got other people around you in jail and prison for crimes. Who's to say what their mentality is? Who's to say what influence they may have on you? You may go in feeling all right and having a strong sense of moral discipline other than the crime that you committed. It could have been whatever. We don't know the situation of why all people are incarcerated. There's different scenarios for everyone, but it doesn't matter how you go in. Being around that environment and that energy for any length of time can have an absolute effect on you. So people returning home need strong support systems. They need family. They need friends. Good friends, healthy friends, friends who are involved in positive activities. You still hanging out on the corner, posted up, smoking and drinking and, you know, all of those kinds of things. That's not the environment to put a returning citizen into. No. They need to get to whatever their religious reliance is. If you're Muslim, you need to get to the masjid. If you're a Christian, you need to find a church that makes you feel good. If you're a Buddhist, then you need to get with your, you know, circle yourself around people of like minds who are doing positive and good things. No one is perfect. We all are falling short of the glory, right? So even if you're a Christian or you're Muslim or you're Buddhist or you're 5% or whatever it is that you are, no one is perfect. But typically, if you put yourself in those surroundings with those kinds of people, chances are stronger that you're going to have a stronger support system that's healthy and productive, and it's going to benefit you instead of recidivism and putting you back into an incarcerated situation. And for our folks returning home that have no family, well, you know, I just don't have a comment for that right now. Although that was a conversation that we definitely skimmed over. It's a bad situation. It's very bad to have no family at all. And those are the people that we need help. We need to help immediately because they have nothing. They have absolutely no one. And they need someone immediately, because if you have no one and you come back after 15 years of being incarcerated, you come back out into the society the way people are nowadays, you think they give a damn that you're a returning citizen? Listen, I'm just telling you, people are not always very nice. Not always very nice. We live in a society where people are very selfish, egocentric. They only think of themselves. They don't think about the humanitarian experience of all of us, that we're all in this world together. We're all connected, you know, our soul, our spirit, our energy. They don't think like that. They think it's me, I. And that's all that it is. And so a returning citizen can come home. No one knows they're a returning citizen, that they're just coming out of the pen or whatever you call it, the prison, the pen, whatever. And they're not always very nice. They're not nice to us who've never been incarcerated. So how do you think they're going to treat someone who's been incarcerated? I mean, you know, the young brother that I first had here on the show with me when I first started doing my show, we could not show his face because he was on, he was still strongly connected to the Department of Corrections, and we didn't want to get him in any trouble for sharing with us the information that he shared. And, you know, I've tried to help that brother to get a job. Now, I have not had an opportunity to sit with him and show him how to use a computer or do the cell phone. But what I have done is I have gone to the Department of Labor, picked up different things, you know, that might be jobs that would be applicable for him, and I have given them to him. If I see that brother, I tell him, hey, so-and-so-and-so is hiring, blah-blah-blah is hiring, and I try to help him the best that I can. Now, I don't know whether he's working or not, but I see him all the time, day and night, and I know if you're working, you got to be at work sometime, but, you know, me personally, I'm constantly running around back and forth, in and out, Who's to say what his work schedule might be? So I'm not saying he doesn't have a job. I'm just saying that if he doesn't, and if you're on probation and parole, if you don't get a job within a certain amount of time they give you, they can violate you. They can literally violate you and you can go back to jail. So it's an ugly situation. It's like a cycle, a cyclone that just goes round and round and round again, over and over again in a circle. And if they don't get help to somebody to pull them out of that, then they're going to end up back in jail. So, you know, that's for us who are out here. You know, I'm asking you to please have some sympathy, some empathy for our returning citizens. Whether you know, honestly, if you just have some human compassion for life itself, for all humanity, you know, be respectful and not selfish and arrogant and egotistical and it's always about you, but make it about all of us. How can I help all of us? What can I do today that makes the world a better place to live in, that makes my little section of the world a better place to live in? You know, just doing that would change everything. But, you know, I don't know. Anyway, moving right along, I will continue to have conversations with Brad Owens. I will continue to work towards my support group for the family reunification, getting children. You know, parents have been missing for 5, 10, 15 years, dad or mom, whoever, sister, somebody's been gone, and now they're coming back. The kids have grown up. When they left, they were 2 and 3 years old. Now they come back, and the kids is graduating from high school or, you know, graduating from college or whatever. You know, kids are all grown up. But the person who's been incarcerated still wants a relationship with them. So there are dynamics to that. So we have to find ways in order to reunify the father, the mother, the children, the auntie, the uncles, the whoever, family reunification. And that's what I'm working on with Brad Owens. And hopefully his wisdom and his guidance will continue to teach me. So I'm not sure how much time I have. It's probably been close to 30 minutes. But I want to say really quick an announcement. I want you to know that WDAS is having their Saturday night party at the Riverfront, the Chase Center. That's going to be coming up on August 31st. August 31st, the WDAS Saturday night party at the Riverfront, the Chase Center. It should be quite a party. And I strongly recommend that you guys get your tickets for my dear friend, Andrea Queen. Andrea Queen. She's on Facebook. Go to her page, Andrea Queen. She's selling tickets for $15, $20. You got to get in touch with her. You got to get your tickets from Andrea Queen because I'm telling you, this sister has tickets to the WDAS Saturday night Get Down with the Get Down. And yes, I will be there. And I do pray that you'll ask me to dance because, you know, mama liked to party a little bit. I got a little swag, you know what I mean? I'm real cool with my thing. I'm real smooth. So hope to see you there on August 31st. Also, it's very important that I let you know that Brother Lamel, our dear friend Brother Lamel, he's also on Facebook. He is trying to get rid of a printer. A really good printer that you can do, well, all your office printing on. And I think he said it has a laser or something laser to it. I'm not sure. But I need you to direct message Brother Lamel and ask him about his yard sale in Baltimore. He's getting rid of a lot of stuff from his apartment, some really good stuff, and he's willing to sell it for the right price. So get in touch with him. Ask him about the printer. If you have an office or you just run a business from your home and you're able to get that, I want you to have a conversation with Brother Lamel because I'm telling you, it's a good printer and you don't want to miss out on that. He's got it for an excellent price and he's willing to negotiate that with you. Okay. Also, another very important announcement. This is for my returning citizens and their family. I want you to write this down. It's imperative that you get this information. Governor John Carney will be hosting A construction career expo. Construction career expo. If you are a returning citizen, or maybe you're not a returning citizen, you're just a citizen, and you're interested in getting into a career in construction, then you want to catch up with Governor John Carney on Monday, September 23rd. Write that date down. Monday, September 23rd, Governor John Carney over at the riverfront. He will be connecting construction employers with construction employees, potential employees. So if you're interested in a career in construction, you really want to get that wealth building going, you've got to come out to Governor Carney's Construction Career Expo. It's for your own benefit. And that, again, is Monday, September 23rd. It starts at 3 o'clock p.m. But you'll find that I'll post it on my webpages, on my page as well. But you can go to Governor John Carney's page and you can see it as well. And finally, my dear friend, Donna Quillette, whom I care about so much. We've had our differences and we've gone toe to toe on some issues, but the love is strong and it's very much there. I want to thank her for posting on my page something that I did not know, and that is the Commissioner Claire DeMatteis will be engaged in a conversation with Christiana Kehr, who is going to do a review of the prison healthcare system. And God knows we are thankful for that. By whatever name we want to call God, we are thankful that they are getting involved with the healthcare system inside of the Delaware Department of Corrections. Because the healthcare system inside of the Delaware Department of Corrections, and most likely the Department of Corrections all across America, they are lacking in so many different ways. I can't begin to tell you the stories that I've heard from people who have had minor, just a small health concern, not too big, not real, you know, nothing major, just a small health concern, that it actually grows into something that can become life-threatening. And people have died. People have died in prison because they didn't have proper health care and the services that go along with that. And I'm telling you, the same thing works with counseling. We have got to do better at getting more counselors, qualified teachers into these prisons, qualified health care into these prisons. You know, I don't know what it is, what the issue is, why people are not applying for the jobs. Are you afraid? I assure you, it is not an unsafe place to be. You know, it's correctional officers, guards, people are locked up in cages, and chances are that what happened with the prison riot of 2017 most likely will not happen again, because measures have been taken to disallow that sort of behavior from ever taking place again, because that was an atrocity, what took place in 2017. But they have put measures in place so that that never happens again. And I am putting a call out to all of my qualified teachers, healthcare providers, counselors, mental health providers, drug and alcohol counselors, please, please put in the application, apply for the job. We need you. That's the only way we're going to make prison a little bit more humane, is by applying for the jobs. I just don't have any other way that I can say that to you. I mean, would I have to get on one knee and beg you to apply for the job? Because we need you. And that's all across America, not just in Delaware, but everywhere in America. Apply for the jobs. And they're state jobs, so you know they come with benefits and pretty much a decent salary. And I don't know what the salaries are, but they're decent enough that you can feed your family and take a vacation, a two-week vacation, at least once a year. So please apply for the jobs to work in America's prisons. We need you on all the different levels. And finally, let me close out with this. I had some job things I wanted to share with you, but I don't have time for that. So I just want to say to all of my returning citizens, please Do not underestimate the Department of Labor. Go to your local Department of Labor, wherever that is, and walk in. They are a wealth of information, a wealth of help and assistance. They will help you. They will show you how to use the computer and how to apply online for a job. They have classes. And if you're a returning citizen and you quietly, you know, make that known to the people that need to know that, they will make sure they look out for you because they genuinely do. They care. They really do care. So please do not underestimate your local Department of Labor. I can speak for the one right here in Delaware, over on Market Street. I know everyone there, from Saran K to everyone. And I just tell you, they're a great, great group of people. Really very, very helpful. A beautiful, beautiful group of people. So please don't sleep on that. If you're looking for a job, hit up the Department of Labor. They've got one for you. The reason that I am sharing or that I am studying my federal rules of civil procedure, obviously I've already made mention to you that I've now taken an interest in a particular case that is on a federal level. And I don't want to say too much about it, but I will say this. I have a meeting with IMAC in the next while. I'm not going to say when, but I will say that I will be meeting with IMAC, which is Interdenominational Ministers Action Council. And they will be meeting with me to hear what I have to say, and then we'll go forward from there. And of course, I'll keep you abreast of it. As things transpire, I'll make sure you know about it, but typically I'll only tell you what you need to know. And excuse me. So that pretty much concludes my announcements for tonight. I want to say thank you to Brad Owens. If you're not watching, hopefully you'll get the message that I'm studying the information you gave me. I'm also studying my federal rules of civil procedure so that I can move forward into our federal laws for a federal case that I'm looking very closely at. I'll be meeting with IMAC in the very, very near future to have a conversation with them because there's power in the clergy. There's power in the clergy. So when you get clergy behind you or beside you, there's power. And I am thankful for that. So moving forward, I just want to say thank you to everyone who is tuning in. Thank you for your continued support. Please share this video. Share every video that I do. Just share, share, share. It's important to get the knowledge and the information out. I want people to know what I'm doing. There are other things that are coming down the line. It's a very strong possibility that I'll be on television as well as on Facebook, radio, podcasts, you know, whatever it takes to get the information out is what I'm going to do to make sure that I get it out. So I'll be announcing to you what television and what station and where you can find me for Make Some Intelligent Noise. Thank you for joining me. Make sure you get your Black's Law. Check it out. Read it. What does the word jurisdiction mean? And what do the words inside of the definition of jurisdiction, what does it mean? Are you subject matter? Are you a subject to the jurisdiction? This is Rochelle Wilson. Thank you so much. I love you. God bless. Have a wonderful, fabulous evening. And I'll see you on the very next edition of Make Some Intelligent Noise. Peace and grace.